From multiple sides, the Donald is now under attack, being buffeted by threats of a third-party campaign, an apparent death threat by a Glenn Beck friend, Hillary Clinton's various statements, and all the other menaces. Of course, Trump continues to hang in there because that's what he does. Whether the third-party run will materialize, promised by another skeptic and toxic neocon, Bill Kristol, now the request to remove Trump, which some interpreted as a seeming death threat by Brad Thor, somebody that Glenn Beck hangs out with while talking to Beck, is the second time Glenn Beck has been associated with potential violence towards Trump. I guess Glenn Beck doesn't like Donald Trump. Meanwhile, Kristol, who edits the uber-conservative rag, the Weekly Standard, hates the daylights out of Trump and would do anything he could to knock him out of the race. The weird thing is that this cabal of never Trump boys at one time was united by the never Hillary mantra. How times have changed, and is Trump really so horrible that he is the worst of all possible worlds? So as we try to figure out what is good versus bad in politics, we have our hands full. For example, is Hillary really better than Trump because she's not as insulting when she basically sold out the Middle East and has repeatedly lied about her actions on emails, including everything involving Libya? Further, she is wildly liberal on many issues, but Trump is still better. Now consider this, has our world changed so much that some people really are pulling for the life of a gorilla over that of a young child? When a four-year-old boy fell into the gorilla enclosure in the Cincinnati Zoo and the 400-pound silverback held the child for 10 minutes, at times dashing through the water with him and holding him like a doll, was it really the wrong decision to shoot the endangered critter? What kind of world have we created where animals have more sympathy than children, born or unborn, and that many would allow a baby to be strangled or crushed rather than a soulless creature shot? Good morning, 608. Kelly here. Had a little wet rain last night. And, you know, did you hear this, Stephen Hawking, who is supposed to be world's greatest cosmologist, saying that he didn't understand Trump? And I got this article that I was kind of looking at over the weekend from the Atlantic magazine. And it's called A Dialogue with a 22-Year-Old Trump Supporter. And the writer of it, Connor Friedersdorf, well-known writer, says, for several days I've been corresponding with a 22-Year-old Donald Trump supporter. He's white, has a bachelor's degree, and earns from $50,000 to $60,000 per year, and he lives in San Francisco. And this guy says to him in an email, I recently became engaged to my Asian fiance, who is making roughly three times what I make, and I am completely supportive of her and proud she is doing so well. We've both benefited a lot from globalization. We are young, urban, and have a happy future planned. We seem molded to be perfect young Hillary supporters, he states, but we're not. In 2016, we're both going for Trump. And then this guy, Friedersdorf, mentions all the problems with Trump. And so the guy writes back to explain why he was willing to overlook any of his other behavior. He states that a backlash basically against political correctness was bigger to him than anything else. And so I think that this is really what's going on, is that people are really sick of political correctness and understand that it's fake. But because there's a punishment for it, you can't really take it on. You can't really go after it. So instead, you know, people just have to kind of sit there and suck their thumbs while it's the greatest thing that's ever happened since sliced bread. But I think there's a lot of people that are going along saying that they're supporting Trump because he represents a chance to push back against political correctness and to reset to have a reset, new broom sweeps clean, that type of thing. So I've got some stories for you on Trump. And just let me get this one out first because I think it's kind of interesting. It is, and I'm using the new, if you weren't listening yesterday, I did a live show. We're using the new computer. It is beautiful, my friends. Call up if you need advice on ordering a computer. I think I finally understand what to do. All right, here is a little statement from Scott Adams, speaking to Bill Mayer, who says that Donald Trump is going to obliterate Hillary Clinton. And that is something that I think is getting more and more likely every day. And you've got an article here. Yes, Trump can win in Real Clear Politics. And so check this out from Scott Adams, who is, hold on one second here. Dilbert, the Dilbert creator, the guy that created Dilbert.
He is the creator of the Dilbert comic strip and author of How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big, Scott Adams. Scott, how are you, sir? Great to meet you. Okay. So, now there's no one in this audience who hasn't read a Dilbert comic, right? Okay. I think that means they did. Yes. And I was reading that it is in 2,000 newspapers. I was surprised there are 2,000 newspapers left.
Oh, yeah.
In 65 countries, it is truly one of the great everyman characters that obviously worldwide people can relate to, the guy in the cubicle. And you kind of were that guy, right? You worked for Pac Bell?
For 16 years, yeah.
Right.
I worked in a big bank, and then I worked in the phone company, and I found out things were equally screwed up in both places, and I thought, hey, there's something here. I can write about this.
Right. It really took off. What I didn't know about you is that you are really an expert on persuasion. So I've been trying to invite people on the show who could explain how we might defeat Donald Pumpkinhead. And tell me your thoughts on that.
First of all, I'm a trained hypnotist. And I'm
trained hypnotist?
Yes, I learned hypnosis in my 20s. I actually went to school for it. And I'm a...
May we have a volunteer from the audience? Look at all these people.
And I've been studying persuasion for decades. And when I saw Trump last summer displaying the tools of persuasion, I thought, oh my God, he's not a crazy clown. Everything he's doing, including his complete ignoring of the facts, is persuasion perfection. And I called him to be the landslide winner in the general election last year because the tools he's using, essentially he's basically taking a flamethrower to a stick fight. There's nobody using the same tools he's using. So his complete ignoring of facts are actually part of the persuasion because he doesn't give you targets. He doesn't give you details of his policies usually. So he's reducing the number of targets while making you feel good and focus on the things he wants. So it's not about facts. It's about focus and attention.
He also seems to be a master of branding. You know, we see this. He never, ever says the word Hillary now without crooked before. Crooked Hillary. Crazy Bernie. I mean, this is like sixth grade level stuff, but that's
so
the
wrong. No, so wrong. That is the best persuasion you'll ever see. When I heard low energy, I called
low energy, right?
Yeah, I called the end of Bush that day because that is a sticky insult. So these are not random insults.
They're random. I'm not saying they don't work. I'm just saying he brands people. Well, low energy, crazy, crooked.
No, but there's something else to it. He's working on confirmation bias. When you see anything come out in the news that looks like maybe Hillary Clinton did something a little bit suspicious, you say crooked Hillary. So he's setting these up so that you're reminded of them.
It really comes in. Yeah, I mean, it looked great this week when that report came out. It fed right into the narrative.
Right. And Lion Ted, same thing.
Right.
He's a politician. He's going to say something.
Right.
Somebody's going to call a lie. And when they do, the nickname just pops in your mind.
I remember when he called Dr. Ben Carson the sheriff of nodding off.
And by the way, he A-B tests this just like software people do. So he says these nicknames in front of people. He sees the reaction, and then he uses them. The brilliant thing he did recently was he came up with a second one for Clinton. He said, well, is she heartless? Is it a heartless Hillary or is it a crooked Hillary? And he actually made people debate whether she was more heartless or more crooked. And that's all intentional. This is all technique. It's like,
well,
it's called,
and she's conversely so bad at it. I mean, I used to say her slogan, Ready for Hillary, was for me a perfect slogan because it described exactly how I felt. Are you ready for Hillary? Yes, I'm ready. It was like getting a shot. Am I excited? No, just I'm ready for Hillary. Just let me roll this, you know.
All right, so one of the problems with Hillary's race is that they know from polling, and you can just see it from watching what's happening with Bernie Sanders, is that Hillary does not have the same level of support she did the first time around. And so she's really fighting for her life. She undoubtedly can come and take the nomination unless she gets in trouble. And then they're talking about Joe Biden and that crazy kook from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, who pretended she was Donald Trump calls Pocahontas. She pretended she was Native American to be able to get hired by Pennsylvania and Harvard. And now she's in the Senate. But all right. So anyway, so there's this thing going on with this ape that had this child in its hand. And I want to get into that a little bit later. But let's take a little break here. And there is some amazing stuff going on weather-wise on the coast of North Carolina or South Carolina, but it's Texas. We've been talking about this for a year. More flooding. 618, 619, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523, 1450. We'll be right back to get into the weather. So we have a couple of weather stories, one of which is the story with the flooding on the coast. But Texas is the big one because it just keeps rising. That rain keeps coming down. No matter what else is happening, it seems to be raining in Texas. Check this out. And this is from Good Morning America, ABC News.
Deadly holiday weekend weather, historic flooding in Texas and Kansas, killing at least six people as the East Coast deals with Tropical Depression Bonnie. Ginger is going to have a lot more on all of this in a moment. But first, ABC's Gio Benitez is on Rockaway Beach here in New York City with the latest. Gio, good morning to you.
Hey, Dan, good morning to you. We've been seeing this rain and fog all morning long. It's a Memorial Day washout. And this morning, so much of this country is dealing with some devastating weather.
Deadly storms plaguing millions this Memorial Day weekend. Some 20 inches of rain crippling eastern Texas with flash floods proving catastrophic, killing at least six and triggering emergency evacuations in at least four towns.
Definitely scary. Thought we were going to be safe.
This morning, at least two missing, including an 11-year-old boy in Kansas, swept away when he fell into a creek trying to cross it. In Texas, the Coast Guard deploying helicopters searching for a 37-year-old man washed away after helping rescue a woman who had been swept into the water earlier. first responders going door to door by boat, pulling one stranded resident after another to safety, while others wade through water up to their hips. This man carried to dry land on a stretcher. This group holding out a ladder to save a woman stuck in her van.
I could have drowned.
Drone video capturing the far-reaching floodwater, overflowing rivers turning roadways into waterways, rows of cars and a school bus swallowed. Rescuers pulling a woman out of this swamped car. An eighth grader recording this video from inside a bus, treading high water.
I've never seen the water this high.
In South Carolina, Tropical Depression Bonnie bringing the water, at least 8 inches of rain, making for a treacherous drive along I-95. Dangerous rip currents and rough waves hitting beaches, brimming with tourists for Memorial Day weekend.
And back out here live on Rockaway Beach, I can tell you this rain will start to clear up over the next few hours, but it'll start right back up tonight, so flooding is definitely a concern, Amy.
All right, a rough weather weekend for all. Gio, thanks so much, and let's turn now to Ginger with more on those deadly floods and rain in Texas. It's not over yet.
Yeah, this is going to be our headline for the next couple of days because of this. The flood warning's already in place. Some of those rivers would flood because they've already had that much rain, but we're going to get more. So look, already this morning, at this hour, storms moving through, strong at times, even potentially severe, but the most severe part of this is going to end up being the flash flooding. 3 to 5 inches in different pockets south of Dallas and Austin, south of Wichita Falls there. And then we have to go to the East Coast, and we put on this plume of moisture. This is really interesting to watch. Kind of around the depression left over from Bonnie there, the remnants, and all that moisture coming up along the coast, that is what is going to drench a lot of holiday weekend plans at the beach. So you say, well, that doesn't sound too bad. Well, when it adds up and when it starts ponding on the roadways, we've already seen issues here in New York City, that's what's going to occur and affect some of your driving this weekend. So here's the rain totals, right? The remnants of Bonnie going to leave you parts in South Carolina, North Carolina, again, another 3 to 5 inches at times. And then anywhere from 2 to 3 in the red pockets west of Hartford and Boston, a little bit inland when you get a few of those higher elevations. Now check this out. Anybody driving today in the middle of the nation, those are going to be your trouble spots, also along the East Coast, right down there to Orlando. All right. Obviously, this is not a washout for everyone, something that we're going to be following throughout the morning. I'll have much more coming up in a couple of minutes.
A lot of thanks. Trouble spots across the country, though. Ginger, thank you.
All right. So just kind of a brief overview. I've got a couple of more here for you. There's a lot out there. And here's a little bit on Bonnie, on the South Carolina.
More than 8 inches has already fallen on parts of South Carolina. David Begno is in Jasper County, where highways are blocked by floodwaters this morning. David, good morning.
David, this part of the state is known as the Low Country. So the inland flooding that I'm standing in is not uncommon. But here's what happened. When Bonnie moved ashore, it essentially stopped. It was stationary, and the flooding became severe and significant. About a half mile behind me is I-95. It has reopened this morning, and that is the good news travelers were wanting to hear as they get ready to head south and head home on this Memorial Day. On Sunday, Charleston, South Carolina was hit with record-setting rainfall. Tropical Storm Bonnie made landfall with winds of up to 35 miles per hour. In Jasper County, South Carolina, the water rose quickly, flooding gas stations, cars, and some homes.
We woke up this morning and our whole yard was flooded. We have been living here almost 41 years and never experienced anything like this.
The flooding prompted officials to evacuate the county jail and transfer prisoners to neighboring counties. The greatest threat was on the roads. Flash flooding transformed highways into waterways. These stranded travelers were rescued by boat after their car got stuck in floodwater.
Nothing could have forewarned us.
We didn't realize then the water kept getting deeper and deeper.
On I-95 Sunday in the city of Ridgeland, traffic was at a standstill. Flooding forced officials to close the southbound lanes all day Sunday.
How long have you been stuck in the I-95 traffic?
3.5 hours.
How far have you gone?
3 miles.
In nearby coastal areas, beaches, normally packed with tourists on this holiday weekend, were all but deserted. High winds and dangerous riptides kept swimmers away.
It sucks. It does. But I guess we've just got to find something indoors to do.
All right. So, and now just a little bit on Texas. And this is from Watch It News.
Residents of some rural southeast Texas counties are bracing for more flooding on Monday along a river that is expected to crest at a record level. Ironically, this is occurring just 2 years after the river had run dry in places because of drought. National Weather Service meteorologists predicted that the Brazos River would crest at 53.5 feet by midday Tuesday in Fort Bend County, 3 feet above the previous record and topping a 1994 flood that caused...
Experience innovative technology in the GMC terrain and available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot lets you take the internet on the go. And available color-touch radio with Telelink uses Bluetooth voice activation.
A little bit of a interruption there. So, anyway, Texas really getting overwhelmed with flooding. And I've got another... Here's just a little bit more of that clip.
Technology.
Actually, all right, so it's not perfect yet, but it's getting closer. Now, here is a little bit more on Texas. I had like 20 clips, but obviously I can't play them all.
On Monday, the Brazos River slowly rose to an expected crest of more than 3 feet above the previous record after torrential rains last week. Now residents of some rural southeast Texas counties are bracing for more flooding. National Weather Service meteorologists predicted that the river would crest at 53.5 feet by midday Tuesday in Fort Bend County, topping a 1994 flood that caused extensive damage. The Travis County Sheriff's spokeswoman said that a man whose body was recovered late Sunday from a retention pond in the Austin area near the Circuit of the Americas auto racing track appeared to be one of two people reported missing earlier.
All right, so basically, needless to say, state the obvious, there's a lot of problems in Texas. 6:30 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. We'll be right back. All right, so there is a debate that is occurring, a massive debate over whether, this is so crazy, whether a gorilla should have been shot that had a baby. And what happened is that there was a family that was at the Cincinnati Zoo, and apparently there was more than one kid. And people have no idea how muscular and powerful gorillas are. Even chimpanzees are extremely powerful. And the upshot is that you would have no idea how easy it would be for this gorilla to, so this 4-year-old kid falls in this 10 or 12 foot moat, and the kid is obviously dazed or whatever, you know, 4-year-old kid. The gorilla goes over and grabs the kid and sits there with him. And then after a while gets up and goes across the water and kind of drags the kid along. Now, some people are saying he wouldn't have harmed him. Other people are saying that, he would have eventually harmed him. There was an article that just came out in CNN that said, basically, well, I've got it right here. Nobody was going to get that kid from that gorilla. Anyway, so the debate is over whether this endangered silverback, I think it was a silverback gorilla, should have been shot. And, I mean, I'm really somewhat surprised. If there was a chance that this gorilla could have killed this kid, is it really a debate? But anyway, check it out. I guess if you're a crazy animal nut and animals are more important than people, there is no debate because, you know, let the gorilla do what it wants. And if the kid survives, that's a bonus.
There's no doubt about it. That does not just mean the dozen or so keepers in our primate department or the couple of hundred zoo employees, but, you know, we have 1,000 volunteers at the zoo. We have hundreds of thousands of people who are members of the zoo. And, of course, the entire community is very involved with Cincinnati Zoo. So it is a big loss. That said, we're very glad that the little boy is okay. That is one happy thing in a dangerous and bad story. Naturally, we did not take the shooting of Harambe lightly, but that child's life was in danger. And people who question that or are Monday morning quarterbacks or second guessers don't understand that you can't take a risk with a silverback gorilla. They're very big, 3 times bigger than a man, 6 times stronger than that. This is a dangerous animal. In the real world, you make difficult calls, but you have to make them, and the safety of that child is paramount. I'm proud of our team that handled it, and I'm proud of our team that's handled everything since. In tough times, you know who your friends are. We've heard from thousands of people around the world, colleagues all the way to Jane Goodall, zoo directors from all over the world, with both sympathy, with support for a difficult decision. And people that know gorillas well, people that research them in the wild, people that work with them in captivity, know exactly what decision we made and why.
All right, here is from Jack Hanna, who agrees 100% with the decision to kill the gorilla.
Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden's decision to kill an endangered gorilla is sparking outrage. A 4-year-old boy made it past a barrier and into an enclosure 15 feet below. He came face to face with a 450-pound male gorilla named Harambe. The zoo says the boy was dragged and thrown before the animal was shot and killed. The child was treated at a hospital.
His family says he is now, quote, home and doing just fine. You know Jack Hanna from his many national TV appearances over the years. He's the director emeritus of the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium, and he joins us now. Jack, good morning.
Morning.
Jack, you've been doing this for over 40 years, and we've all seen that video now several times. But what is it that you see in that video about the gorilla's behavior that perhaps we don't?
Well, real quickly, if I could say one thing, 10 seconds. The Hanna family, the Columbus Zoo, Cincinnati Zoo, the zoo world, this is obviously a terrible tragedy. But however, we have given over tens of millions of dollars over the last years to the gorilla world, both lowland and mountain gorillas. I happen to have a home 3 miles from where the gorillas live in Rwanda. That's where mountain gorillas. However, what you see here, you hear the screaming going on. I hear it in my ear right now. You hear the screaming going on. Watch that gorilla's response, by the way. He doesn't know what's going on. It's just a silverback, by the way, not a female. He hears the response. You can see from the face and the mouth, he's alarmed. Yes, he goes over and looks at the little child there. There's no doubt about that. What happens when you tranquilize the animal? Whether it's a gorilla, whatever animal it might be. As I do research in the wild with gorillas, I've seen what happens, so I know what happens. When that dart hits the animal, this animal, you can imagine, the animal, it's like a shot, but he jumps like this. So what would happen if he had a hold of that little boy? I've seen a silverback gorilla take a green coconut, which you can't even bust up with a hatchet, and go like this, beyond the strength of anything you would ever know. So what choice was made? You have human life and animal life. So what choice was made?
So, Jack, you believe the zoo made the right decision. Obviously, the Cincinnati Zoo has said a child's life was in danger and a quick decision had to be made. It sounds like you agree with them.
I agree 1,000% because why? I've worked with the gorillas and seen them for over 35 years. I have a home next to them in Rwanda, the mountain gorilla. These are lowland gorillas in the Congo, which I just filmed in Gabon in Africa. So when I've seen all this on my entire life of 35 years, both the zoological situation and the ones in the wild, what's happening in the wild right now is sometimes tragic. I've seen gorillas with snares on them, their hands rotting off. We try and provide millions to protect the gorillas. The point is, This animal, they made the correct decision. As a matter of fact, it's a millisecond decision. They cannot tranquilize it. It takes 5 to 10 minutes. All of us are sorry. We're all in the zoo world heartfelt for this whole thing. But thank goodness a human being is alive today because of the decision the Cincinnati Zoo made. So you have human life and animal life. What happened, how the child got in there is not my business. But we just can't build 15-foot walls around everything we have in the zoological park. If you take our safety, by the way, mm-hmm. and you measure it against other recreational things in this country, we'd be at the very top of safety. When you take the amount of either tragedy we've had or injuries, we're at the very top of.
All right, so doesn't that go without saying? What I want to know is the people who believe that the under no conditions should the animal have been shot, no matter what was going on. I mean, these things are so powerful; it's absolutely stunning. All right, let's take a little break here. 644 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450 to call in. We'll be right back, and we'll have a little bit more. Let's see here on. Well, I got to get into Trump just a little bit more. I've got three different angles on this thing, so we'll be right back. All right, there's a third supposed third party coming out after Trump. Check this out.
A mysterious tweet on a sleepy holiday weekend, like this from Bill Kristol. There will be an independent candidate, an impressive one, with a strong team and a real chance.
This is Bill Kristol, by the way. He does the Weekly Standard.
Kristol, the staunchly anti-Trump editor of the conservative Weekly Standard magazine, has been working hard to find that third-party candidate. In an email to CNN, he said an announcement is not imminent, but his tweet sure got a lot of attention, especially from Donald Trump, who responded, "If dummy Bill Kristol actually does get a spoiler to run as an independent, say goodbye to the Supreme Court." CNN is told that Kristol, along with other never-Trump Republicans, have done extensive polling and gathered private data, talking to potential candidates and financial backers.
There's an opening, obviously, for an independent candidate.
They point to public polling as proof there is an appetite. In a survey earlier this month, little more than half of respondents, 51%, said they would be satisfied with a Trump-Clinton matchup. 44% said they'd want a third-party option. As for just Republicans, target voters for Kristol and other anti-Trump conservatives, 39% said they'd want a third-party candidate. But the open question is, who?
Donald Trump is a phony, a fraud.
Two sources close to Mitt Romney tell CNN the 2012 GOP nominee will still not go so far as to run as an independent. Never-Trump forces have also been trying to recruit Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse or retired General Jim Mattis. Sasse sources tell CNN he is still a no. Jim Mattis also has said thanks, but no thanks. Kristol has also floated GOP Congressman Adam Kinzinger. A source familiar with Kinzinger's thinking tells CNN he would have considered it, quote, literally to save the union, because both Clinton and Trump scare him. But he doesn't think the infrastructure exists to get on the ballot. On the stump, Trump mocks Kristol.
You can't find anybody. What a loser.
Most Republicans argue a third-party run would be a disaster for the GOP, splinter the party, and help elect Hillary Clinton.
They could try to hijack another party and get on the ballot. But look, it's a suicide mission.
Even those who are not big fans of Trump.
Absolutely not. I'm going to
no
have
third
my
party.
Say and no way, and I would advise people not to go down that road.
Still, separate from Kristol's efforts, two former Republican governors, Gary Johnson and Bill Weld, won the Libertarian Party nomination this weekend, the most experienced candidates ever for that party.
All right, so we do have, yes, indeed, Johnson. Anyway, it's a stupid attempt by these people that, you know, it would be one thing if these people that were trying to get rid of Trump were actually conservative themselves. That would be interesting, but they're not. They support Romney. They support McCain. These people are the reason that the country and the party is in the trouble that it's in to begin with. So, and now they're going to save the country. They're going to save the union. Can't even save themselves. All right, here's a little bit about Gary Johnson, our own Gary Johnson, Libertarian Party nominee.
To hear who our nominee for the next president of the United States will be. Madam Secretary, please display the results of the election.
Yeah! 55% for Johnson.
Everyone, please stand and give a round of applause for the nominee for President of the United States, Governor Gary Johnson.
You come up the same way I do. Congratulations.
I tell the truth. I am not a liar. And I make plenty of mistakes, but what I say here at this convention is what I say everywhere, wherever I go, and I believe it is a really libertarian message wherever I go. I hope you can see the wisdom of this Libertarian Party exploding, and at a minimum, or let's just not say, at a minimum, I think we're in the presidential debates. Thank you. I know you guys have been loud, but one more round of applause for the next nominee, for the next president of the United States of America, Governor Gary Johnson.
So I think that Johnson is polling at like 10% nationally. I read that somewhere. I don't know how accurate that is. All right, let's take a break for weather and we'll be right back. All right, so who knows? I mean, Johnson is probably not going to get in there no matter what. Now, here is a very weird thing that was associated with Glenn Beck. Is he was on... Okay, all right, so the guy's name is author Brad Bird. And try to see if this is the right one.